Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Work Trends with Megan M. Biro. Whether you're here to network, learn, or share,
we want you to have fun. During this live broadcast and Twitter chat, we'll discuss the future of work with smart and entertaining guests who value today's business and its impact on the world of work for the future. Stay tuned, because we start in 3, 2, 1.
Hi, everyone. Did you hear that volume go in and out? I was playing with it. I am so excited to announce that pretty soon I'm going to have an announcement to make. I'm leaving Blog Talk Radio. I am weeks away. I'll keep everybody posted. Thank you so much for being here today. Welcome to another Talent Culture Work Trends live podcast and Twitter chat. I want to thank my friends and my sponsors and my friends and my mom. Who else can I thank today? I'm having one of those days. I'm just feeling grateful. You know what I mean? Grateful for you for tuning in now or at your leisure. Listen, today's Work Trends event is a very timely topic, and you cannot literally turn on the TV right now, listen to the radio, check out the news on the internet without seeing another story involving sexual harassment. Harvey Weinstein started this, but he certainly, it's not ending here, right? When we talk about like this media snowball that's occurring, right? This is certainly a big statement, but it's also at an epidemic level. And it has been, let's face it, for years before Harvey was even in the mix, right? This has been going on for many, many years. So today I have a very good friend of myself and the talent culture community who is going to be helping us navigate through this topic and better understand what we need to know as company leaders and employees and just everyday people walking the streets, right? Jonathan Siegel is here. He's one of the most sought-after HR attorneys in the country. And for his day job, he's the managing principal of the Duane Morris Institute, the educational arm of the Employment Practices Group. He's kind of a big deal. He's been cited as a national authority on employment issues in articles in the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New York Times, USA Today, Fortune, Forbes, Philadelphia Inquirer. Do I need to say anything else? Oh, and yes, CNN Online, money. The list literally goes, I would be here all day if we had to go through this, but he's super awesome. And if you think that doesn't keep him busy enough, he's provided training to federal and state judges on various employment issues across the country for the past 20 years. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hey, it's good to be with you today, my friend.
No doubt. We need some sage. I need a little sage from you. It's so good to have you back here on Work Trends. I know you're very well known. You've been, you know, in our community for years and beyond, obviously, and you and I go way back. But anyone who's new here to Work Trends, please tell our audience a bit more about yourself.
Well, first, I like being with your community, and I am I'm an HR lawyer, represent companies with the hope of doing the right thing for employees, which we all know is the right thing then for the company. I'm a recovering litigator, gave that up. My whole focus is on prevention, and one of the areas is gender equality, and go down and to gender pay parity, sexual and other forms of harassment. I've actually been dealing with the issue of sexual and other forms of harassment for more than 20 years. So you hit it spot on. It's, you know, Weinstein, I still remember October 5. It sort of blew the top off of any denial that might have existed that harassment was a serious problem. But we all know it's a serious problem, and the denial is gone. It existed, you're right, before then, but now there is no excuse for any organization to ignore it. And I think as individuals, we all need to speak up if we see it, hear it, or become aware of it.
And not to mention, you know, the Larry Nassar case as well. I mean, you and I caught up and had an extensive phone conversation, because when you and I chat on the phone, that's just how it goes. Like, we can talk for hours and hours, but it's like people feeling empowered to be themselves and not to feel ashamed is so important, I think, when you talk about sexual harassment. Don't hide it. Just be yourself. People will still love you, right? I think people feel like there's this huge stigma. Like, if I speak up, I'm going to be blamed. And then you bring the workplace into this, right, Jonathan? And we have a whole other dynamic going on.
Yeah, I mean, from I'm going to apologize for being what I am, a lawyer, but, you know, I was appointed to the EEOC's Select Task Force on Harassment. I'll be an ethical lawyer and give my disclaimer. I don't speak for the EEOC or the task force. But one of the things we learned is that 75% of employees who don't bring claims don't bring their claims. And we'll talk about a continuum of claims because they fear retaliation. So I don't think we can ever get to a point in any culture, and that's talent culture, where people, whatever talent they have, will feel comfortable speaking up unless the non-retaliation policy actually reflects the culture. That people are told that people, when they raise a complaint, are thanked for raising it. That people who stand up, even if their complaint doesn't have merit, don't face retaliation in terms of assignments, promotions, whether people even speak with them. So I think a real critical part of that. Real critical part of getting people comfortable speaking up is making sure there's no retaliation if they do.
Not only that, and I want to uncover this more with you, what about people who stay silent? I mean, let's be honest. To me, it's the silence that's the most insidious part of all this. The people who know what's going on but turn a blind eye. Like, when is that going to become like, you silenced all of us on this? You did not speak up and protect this person? You're in trouble too. Like, we're starting to see a little bit of that ripple effect happening, aren't we? Especially from the Nassar case, when you look at that.
Yeah, and there are some other cases where, you know, the word complicity is being used a lot. I'm not sure you can say to a lower level, maybe very high value, but lower level employee, you have to speak up if an executive or senior person is doing wrong. But if you're in leadership, there's no such thing as being a passive bystander. You have to speak up. You have to let people know. If you see it, hear it, become aware of it, then you need to, at a minimum, investigate it. Not every allegation is true, but every allegation needs to be taken seriously. And it's not even if there's an allegation. If you actually see or hear unacceptable conduct and you're a leader and you ignore it, you are condoning it by your silence and you're sending a powerful message. If I thought this was a problem, I'd say something. This is okay. Or otherwise I'd be saying something. So this idea of bystander, I think everyone in the HR community, we don't own civility, but we play a critical role in it. Other leaders need to play a part too. But if we see it or hear it, even if a complaint is made, we need to stand up. And sometimes that means standing up to people that may be senior to us.
What type of risk are employers who don't have an anti-harassment policy in place facing right now? And what are the numbers on that? Like, how many companies out there just don't even have something in place?
I don't have exact numbers, but I think more companies than not now do have an anti-harassment policy and complaint procedure. I should mention sexual harassment is what we're focusing on. But companies better be covering other kinds of harassment, racial, ethnic, religious. You don't want to have – it's not only about law, and I want to make that point in a moment. But imagine a deposition question. Why did you think sexual harassment was important but not racial harassment? So this is an opportunity for organizations in response to your question, what's the risk? It's a risk of harm to employees. That individuals respect their dignity, their ability to feel as human beings is violated if there are objectively unacceptable behaviors. So the first risk is risk of harm to people. And you got to look at the people. That affects the culture, which affects the productivity, which affects the reputation, that can all affect the bottom line, whether people even want to do work with you. And then if you don't have a policy, you don't have a complaint procedure, you don't have supervisory training, you don't take appropriate corrective action when you have complaints raised and they've found to have merit, or you see it, hear it, even in the absence of a complaint, then you have the risk of legal fees and legal liability. And interesting, for public companies, we're seeing some claims by shareholders arguing companies haven't done
enough. Oh, really?
Yeah. So the number of angles at which claims are being raised, quite substantial.
Are you seeing an increase just with this media attention around sexual harassment? Like, are you actually seeing that raise somebody saying something? Or, I mean, I don't know if you're seeing any trends with that, or maybe we're too early days. I don't know.
No, we're seeing a spike, and I think it's a good thing when employees speak up. And this is where sometimes a client might say, well, what's the statute of limitations? That's the wrong question. That may be what you look at in a courtroom. If someone raises something that happened 3 years ago, you still need to give them the opportunity to tell their story, see what was handled. And if that person is still, 5 years ago, still with you, then you still need to look at it. So, a client one time said to me, this is great. We went through a year. This is a couple years ago. We had no complaints of harassment. I'm thinking that may not be so good. That may mean your employees are afraid to speak up. So, yes,
right.
Employees are speaking up more in workplaces. We're getting more letters mm-hmm. from lawyers. And there is an increase in the number of charges that are being filed with agencies and media
mm-hmm.
releases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no surprise. Let's talk
no
about
surprise.
Management training, right? Let's talk about leadership a little bit and creating that culture. There's been some concerns about the effectiveness of management training kind of across the board. But when it comes to this topic, how do we make management training more effective with sexual harassment specifically?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on that. There's been a lot of talk about, is management training effective? And you know what? My view is it's like everything else. Here comes the lawyer line. It depends. It depends on the quality of it. You and I were talking about quality. There's a couple
mm-hmm.
things that are critical for management training. Number one, yes, there's a compliance issue. But if you only focus on it as this is what we need to do to stay out of court, then you devalue the human element, and you can't ignore the human element. This is about preventing harm. The second thing about the management training is managers need to know this isn't something we're simply doing to check a box. These are responsibilities that you have, and if you want to keep your job, you're going to comply with them. That means refraining from unacceptable conduct on a continuum from harassing behavior to unlawful harassment to sexual assault, because not all harassing behavior will rise to the level of illegality. Responding proactively, even in the absence of a complaint, if you see it or hear it, reporting all complaints to your HR function. So I think there needs to be an accountability element. It can't be canned. If it's canned, it belongs in
mm-hmm.
the can. You got to make sure it resonates.
Right.
I think you want to use practical examples so that, sometimes I see in training a lot of language and I'm thinking, I don't even know what this means and I'm a lawyer. You got to be sensitive not to raise things in an offensive way, but we're dealing with offensive material. So we need to,
mm-hmm.
Sexual harassment is by definition offensive conduct. So you have to be
right.
specific, but still thoughtful in how you are. You have to customize it. You want to look at risk factors. What are the risk factors in your organization, such as do you have a younger workforce? Do you have individuals that may be reliant on tips, such as restaurant workers? Do you have individuals that are in decentralized locations? So I think really one of the key elements is customizing. If it's off a shelf, it usually is going to be of minimal value. And then not getting lost in legal labels. A policy and the training should really make clear the following behaviors are unacceptable, even if they're not unlawful in and of themselves. If you think of it this way, sexual assault is obviously unlawful. Telling someone, sleep
mm-hmm.
with me or you don't get a job, is obviously unlawful. A sexist quote joke in and of itself mm-hmm. is probably not going to be severe or pervasive enough to be unlawful, or it won't be. But it still warrants a response. So focus on what's acceptable, not what's unlawful. You don't want to get close to that legal line. Makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like anything else, it's about behavior. So if you've got a cluster of behaviors with a leader that maybe saying things that are kind of inappropriate, but then it's coupled with like some other actions that have been taken, then you're getting yourself into hot water real quick. You know, it's like, I tell you. And then, you know, and this is so hard, I think, for so many people to talk about. Like, what do you have a PowerPoint with like, hey, these are this is what you shouldn't be doing? Like, how are you actually visualizing or communicating this with people, Jonathan?
Well, I mean, I'm glad that you asked that, because I think a PowerPoint, like anything else, can be a tool, but it shouldn't be the focus. What you really want to do, I think, is have a dialogue, make clear what's objectively unacceptable, and that we all can go down the list, jokes about someone's race or religion, inappropriate comments about sexual orientation, comments about someone's pregnancy, someone's attractiveness, lack of attractiveness. I have an interesting point mm-hmm. that you might find that a lot of people say, well, that wasn't sexual harassment. It was just demeaning because of my gender. That can also be sexual harassment, gender-biased comments. So you kind of want to go through what are the obvious unacceptable behaviors, obvious, you hope, but you don't say the obvious. And then I think it's also important to deal with things that are more subtle, things where there are areas of gray, because I think and still believe that we can have warm workplaces without them becoming mm-hmm. harassing, that there can be civility
right.
without sterility. So how do you deal with things like a hug? How do you deal with things
right.
like kiss? Do you say in a workplace we have no drugs, no hugs? I'm not sure that's realistic. But you might say,
I'm going down this road right now, not to be funny or make light of this, but what's wrong with hugs? Like, at what point does this become kind of ridiculous? It's like, we're human, right? So like,
right.
to your point, like, where do you draw that line? Like, what would you suggest if I wanted to make it an anti-harassment policy part of my culture in my company and not just a paper policy? Like, how do we do that? That's a lot
so
of people
I think,
want to know.
And you know what? Because I think with hugs, I think you look at a number of factors. Number one, relationship. Number two, context. Number three, power. Number four,
yeah.
the nature of the hug. So that, you know, if someone on a holiday party gives someone a hug and says, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and it's in front of other people, I think that's socially acceptable. And I wouldn't say mm-hmm. you can't do that. Walk into someone's office and say, hey, it's time for your Friday hug. It's time for your Saturday summons. So sometimes it's just thinking and looking at individuals' reactions. The thing that is interesting to me is people say, well, you can always read people. You can't always read people, and you got to sometimes look to see not only how they mm-hmm. may react, but also do they hug? How do they treat others? And also think mm-hmm. of the setting, you know. If I were in a business meeting with five people and there were four men and you, even though we're friends, I might think in that setting, you know what, I'm going to shake
right.
your hands and then afterwards say, now as a friend, let me give
yeah.
you a hug. But I might be thoughtful
right.
about what the context was of that.
See, the context, we keep going back to this, and this is such a big topic, and I'm so glad you brought it up. So true. Because when I see you at Sherman Chicago, guess what? We're going to hug, but it's going to be in
yeah.
context. Because you and I do that. Like, when we see each other, that's what I want to do. And but it's a reciprocity, and it's an understanding of respect and friendship. So you're right. Like, you can't make this the same scenario when you go from A to B to C to D, right?
Right.
People are people.
You're exactly.
Everybody has their own relationships and their own boundaries. You know, I'm a hugger. I admit that. Hey, everybody, I admit it. I'm a hugger. So I need to be careful with how and when and why. And I think others out there, if you're in the same boat I'm in, maybe we start thinking about that a little bit, right?
What you said, because it's self-awareness. I'm a hugger too. So now I am always thoughtful about, or try to be thoughtful about, the when, the where, the who, all those factors, because I know other people have different perspectives on it. The same thing can happen, you know, with a comment on appearance. We all know saying you look sexy or hot or ugly. I mean, that's also, by the way, can be harassing to give someone to talk, you know. And did you ever notice the people who denigrate women's looks kind of don't own mirrors of their own? Putting that aside.
Yeah. As a woman, I've been there, by the way. I've been on all sides of this, believe me, over the years. And it's like, it's fine line, you know. And I mean, I have a sense of humor, luckily. But still, you know, I think many women out there have experienced this over the years. I know I still do in certain circumstances.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, how do you react? What do you say? How do you just be yourself and let your guard down, but still keep it, especially in the business setting? It gets kind of, you know, it's complicated, you know?
You know what? It is complicated. Everyone has a right to raise concerns when they want, but the practical reality is, you pick your battles. I think everyone does in life. And if someone says that's a nice suit, and you're uncomfortable, then maybe you say nothing and you hope the person gets the message. Maybe you say thanks, but you know, I don't want, you know, thanks, but I'm not comfortable when you say that. Don't do it again. But you know what?
Mm-hmm.
This is where sometimes, again, word choice. Think about nice suit. That sound okay to you?
Yep.
How about you look nice in that suit?
Different.
Oh yeah. So
just a little different because it's more personalized.
It's more personalized, exactly. So, and then nice suit, if I saw you, you know, running down at Sherman Annual, I think that would be fine if I said great, you know, nice suit. But if you were making a presentation and then with three other thought leaders and the three guys, I said, great point, great point, great point, and to you, nice suit. Well, all of a sudden, I'm focusing on their thoughts and your suit.
Right.
That's diminishing. So that's why these like one size fits all, no hugs, no comments on appearance. I think that goes too far. If everything is harassment, then nothing's harassment.
Yeah.
And
one of
my biggest fears is that if we don't figure out what the continuum is and learn to operate in the gray and be able to say, you know what, if I'm not sure, I won't. And if I'm uncomfortable, say, hey, you know what? Not comfortable for me. Don't do it again. Thanks. It can be that simple. But if we get to the point where in workplaces, and this is one thing with training I've seen, you know, fright fodder, everything is a potential claim. Then one of my fears is that men still have disproportionate power. Men will withdraw. And when men withdraw from women, then they may be giving men advantages through social interaction that women aren't having. More social inclusion, the business trips, the mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer, the strategy for avoiding harassment can't be to avoid people of the opposite or same sex. It has to be avoiding the behaviors and being thoughtful about what you do with people. You got to hear this one. This one came in last week.
Yeah.
Someone said said we're thinking of having a rule that when there's, I'm changing all the facts, that when you have a meeting with a woman, if you're a man, you have to have the door open. Think about the message, number one, you're sending. She's not getting the same confidentiality. And number two, you're sending a message, I don't trust you. Well, how's she supposed to trust? So maybe the message should be, so I said, well, what's the concern? Well, there's a couch in the office. Okay, I'd heard of the elephant in the living room. Let's deal with the couch in the living room. Maybe you shouldn't have a couch if you're going to have a couch in the office, maybe you sit across a table, and maybe in 2018
you
have the wisdom not to sit next to each other on the couch, but don't treat the person like they're...
Remove the couch.
Yeah, I mean, no offense to couch manufacturers, but you know what? Little tables, we can sit around and talk, so we break down the distance, but we don't sit next to each other where someone walks in, and it does look a little odd.
You have to have a sense of humor with this too, right? I mean, you and I will banter on with each other and laugh and all that. I mean, where do you draw the line? It's so funny. But, I mean, speaking of couches and casting couches and Stormy Daniels, what has been your reaction to this avalanche of harassment complaints primarily against men in power? Like, talk to us just a little bit about that. We're down to about 5 minutes left. So just talk to us a little bit about that. I've got a couple more questions for you.
Yeah, there are some women, but it's predominantly men, so I don't think we should divert. We need, as a legal matter, it could be a woman or a man, but there are more men that have publicly, who we now know through public stories, not just stories, but corroboration and admissions, have abused their power. I don't think, as you alluded to earlier, there's anything new about this. The casting couch goes way back in Hollywood. I think we now know that what people may have, and I use in quotes, accepted before, they won't now. And I think that's a really good thing. You know, when you think about harassing behavior along the continuum, it's sort of, it's abusive. And abuse is often kept quiet, and it's a secret. And that's part of why it continues. I think that airing this and bringing this into the open, where people can talk about it and can really have, I mean, I was online getting coffee and I heard two people say, actually having, while they're getting coffee, a conversation, you think it's okay if I said this? Well, I'm not sure I would have said that. And I'm thinking, I don't know what the answer was, but I think it was great they were having the conversation.
Right. Just talk about it, right? Yep. That's great. So let's talk about solutions a little bit. Tell us about the value of having a rapid response plan, and how do organizations and people go about designing them?
Well, you have to, you know, we deal for all crises, or we try to deal for all crises, a flood, a terrorist attack, etc. What do you do if there is, heaven forbid, but it could happen, you wake up one day and it's not Matt Lauer you see on your iPhone, but the CEO of your company. You need to know what you're going to do, who's going to talk with the media, if anyone, or actually what you're going to say to the media. What are you going to say to your employees? What are you going to say to your other stakeholders? How are you going to make sure relevant documents are preserved? You need to be thinking about attorney-client privilege. Sometimes this is may sound, you know, very lawyery, but someone will send a thing to their lawyer, and then their lawyer sends it to their PR agent, and they haven't thought through that they may have just waived the privilege that and then all that goes with that. So like any other thing, whether it be a pandemic, a flood, a terrorist attack, you need to think what happens. And I'm not suggesting the complaint, a complainant falls into any of those categories. We're talking about anything that could put your company's reputation at risk, or having someone in your midst who could cause harm to your workers. That's another critical point. Someone alleges that John Doe engaged in sexual assault. You got to know, what are you going to do? How are you going to remove him from the workplace? Some of the media headlines, I don't know if you've noticed them, blank, you know, company, either he quits or the company fires him based on the allegation. There's got to be usually some investigation, but you need to remove the person if there are serious allegations of sexual assault, but you got to do it in a way that's not defamatory. So that takes thinking. So a lot of the rapid response plan is sort of preparing what might be, if you will, template documents that you hope you never need, but if you need them, then you're ready to customize them and go.
Well, this has been a super informative conversation with you, my friend. Thank you for stopping by. Let's head on over to Twitter now and just continue this conversation, because it's an important one. Thanks again.
No, thank you.
See you in Chicago.